Kidney School, www.kidneyschool.org. Module 4, Following Your Treatment Plan.
Hi, my name's Nancy Spaeth, and I'm a member of the Life Options Council. My kidneys failed in 1966 when I was 19 years old. Today, I'm a grandma, and I work full-time as a rehab nurse. I'm having a really good life with kidney failure, and you can too.
A wise man once said, "If you aim at nothing, you will hit it every time." Imagine you are taking practice shots with a bow and arrow. You lay a target face up on the grass, walk a short distance away, and shoot an arrow straight up into the air. You hope the arrow will land in the center of the bullseye. What are the chances that you will hit your mark? Slim, you say? Just about impossible would be more likely, not to mention risking your life in the process. Although you say you are shooting for the target, your aim is too random to have any real chance of hitting it. As silly as this might sound, it is just what some people with kidney disease do when it comes to managing their treatment plan. Think of it this way. Your treatment plan involves medications, diet and fluid limits, dialysis or a kidney transplant if your kidneys have failed. With your input, your doctor and healthcare team prescribe a treatment plan tailored for you. Their job is to watch the progress and effectiveness of the treatment plan. Your job is to take part in developing your treatment plan, then follow it and make it work for you. Why worry about following the plan? Because it will help you stay healthy and allow you to keep doing what you enjoy. But to follow it, you need a few things. First, you will need to know why your treatments are prescribed, what effect they will have on your health if you stick with them, and what will happen if you don't. Second, you must know your role and take on the job to follow the plan. Third, let your nephrologist and care team know any barriers that are keeping you from sticking with your plan so they can work with you to overcome them. Fourth, expect frustration and setbacks along the way. Know your triggers and prepare for them so you can stick with your treatment plan. Missing any one of these items is the same as aiming your arrow toward the sky and hoping to hit the target. It probably won't happen. The good news is, you can do a great deal to straighten your shot. This module is designed to help you find the target, understand and take part in the treatment plan, take aim, know your job, and hit the bullseye, follow through. All you need is the will to practice. In this module, we will outline the key pieces of the treatment plan and give you the tools you need to hit the mark. So let's get started. Your role. If you've listened to Module 3, working with your healthcare team, you already know that you are a key team player. In fact, you play a role no one else on your team can assume. Let's further define your role and make it more specific. Choose the job that best describes how you think of your role on your care team. Employee, manager. An employee is someone who does the job he or she is told to do. In one way, this describes your role, but it doesn't go far enough. It is more accurate to think of yourself as a manager. As a manager, you don't just follow orders, you have far more ownership of your own treatment plan. After all, it's your body, your health, and your quality of life that are at stake. The more active you are at learning about and managing your treatment plan, the more control you will feel over your life. Many people think that following their doctor's plan means that they don't make important decisions. This couldn't be further from the truth. As a manager of your own treatment plan, you must make all types of daily decisions about your care. Your doctor expects you to do this. But more importantly, you need to do it for yourself. The reality is that you are going to be making most of the decisions that affect your health. Think about it. Each time you eat, drink, or take a drug, you are choosing to follow or not follow your treatment plan. You are the only one who can make those decisions. Now and then, you may have heard a medical professional use the word compliance to describe your role. To comply is to follow. Sounds passive, doesn't it? We want you to know that if you decide to follow your treatment plan, you will get the best results for your health. If you choose to follow your treatment plan, this implies far more involvement. This is just what we mean by being the manager of your treatment plan. The decisions you make are not just to please your doctor, but for your own benefit. You might be asking, what are these decisions I'll be making? Great question. As we describe the key parts of the treatment plan, your job will become very clear. By the end of this module, you will have a personal plan that will sum up the main points to help you use what you've learned here. Here's what one patient has to say about following her treatment plan. Arlene says, "There are some things I have no choice about. Breast cancer, heart disease, kidney cancer, diabetes, and hypertension that made dialysis necessary. There are many things I have a choice about. Method of dialysis, hemo. Location of dialysis, compliance with my medications, and renal diet, which doctor I see, how much I participate in my own care. One of the most important things I have a choice about is my attitude and outlook. I choose to see dialysis as a part-time job that requires my attendance 3 afternoons a week. In return, it literally gives me life, not bad wages. I have the choice to be angry and sad about the need for dialysis or be grateful that the science is available and thankful that the available programs pay for most of it. Many other chronic diseases are not well-funded and bankrupt families." Managing your medications. Drugs are a major part of your treatment for kidney disease. Which ones you need will depend on how complex your health problem is. People whose kidneys are still working a little may just need a few drugs. People who are on dialysis or have had a kidney transplant may take so many drugs it can be hard to keep track of them all. Which drugs do you take right now? Here are some that are commonly used by people with kidney disease. 1. Blood pressure medications help prevent damage to your heart and blood vessels. Some blood pressure drugs like ACE inhibitors and ARBs also slow down some types of kidney disease. If you do peritoneal dialysis, PD, or daily or nocturnal hemodialysis, HD, you may need fewer blood pressure pills, or you may not need them at all, since these treatments do a better job of controlling blood pressure than standard in-center HD treatments. 2. Blood sugar medications prevent problems caused by high blood sugar. 3. Blood thinning medications reduce the risk of blood clots. 4. Calcitonin helps build stronger bones. 5. Carnitine helps build stronger muscles. 6. Chemotherapy medications can be used to treat lupus flare-ups, cancer, or some types of kidney problems. 7. Cholesterol medications can prevent damage to your heart. 8. Cinacalcet helps treat too high levels of parathyroid hormone that can cause bone disease. 9. Diuretics make the kidneys work harder to remove fluid. 10. Injections of erythropoietin stimulating agents treat anemia, a shortage of red blood cells, by making more red blood cells. Treating anemia can give you more energy and help prevent heart damage. 11. Immunosuppressant medications prevent transplant rejections or treat some autoimmune diseases. 12. Insulin controls blood sugar and prevents organ damage in people with diabetes. 13. Iron provides the building blocks to make red blood cells. 14. Pain medications reduce pain from arthritis, polycystic kidney disease, or other conditions. 15. Phosphate binders are antacids or special drugs that help your body get rid of extra phosphorus that can cause itching and long-term bone problems. If you do daily or nocturnal HD most often at home, you may need fewer binders or even no binders at all, since these treatments remove so much more phosphorus than standard in-center HD does. 16. Renal vitamins. 17. Vitamin D helps the body use calcium better and helps avoid bone problems. 18. Other medications such as Alka-Seltzer, Maalox, and Zantac. 19. Other vitamins, minerals, or herbal supplements. What one family went through with supplements. Natalie says, "Once, while my husband Bob was on dialysis, in our zeal to try all methods, we followed the advice of a practitioner who put Bob on large amounts of alfalfa grass powder. Unknown to us, it was loaded with potassium. Our nephrologist said that we could have caused his heart to stop. The alfalfa powder is very distinct from alfalfa sprouts, which are low in potassium and can be a great filler food. Although we have always respected alternative methods, we became very cautious of supplements. Do you know what your medications look like? Knowing what each of your medications look like can save your life. How? Sometimes mix-ups happen and people get the wrong dose or even the wrong drug. It does happen. Thousands of people become severely ill and many die each year from prescription drug errors. Don't let this mistake happen to you. Learn what each of your medications looks like so you can be on the alert. Although some supplements and alternative therapies can be helpful, it is important to tell your doctor what you are using. Some supplements have the same effect as the medication you may be taking. For example, many supplements cause blood thinning. If you are also taking a blood thinning drug, you may be at risk for bleeding problems. Some supplements have the opposite effect as the drugs you may be taking. For example, echinacea, which strengthens the immune system, can make transplant immunosuppressant drugs less effective. If you ever think about taking supplements or other therapies, protect yourself by talking with your doctor and pharmacist first. To learn more, listen to Module 15, Alternative Treatments. Writing down all your vitamins and drugs may seem like a lot of work, but the list can help you to get the best care. Be sure to bring it along with you on your next doctor visit. The list will help your doctor to see exactly what you are taking so he or she can make changes if necessary. Do you have more than one doctor? If so, show your list to all of them. Sometimes one doctor does not know what the others have prescribed for you. Your dialysis team may ask you to bring in your pill bottles once a month. You may feel like they're treating you like a child, but medication errors are common. Some dialysis nurses have learned by looking at a pill bottle that the drug filled was not the drug prescribed, or that someone is not taking the prescribed drug correctly. Even when you know what your drugs are and why you take them, it can be hard to remember them all. Do you think that any of the ideas below might help you remember? 1. Having a pill box for each day of the week. 2. Setting a timer or alarm on my watch to remind myself. 3. Keeping a notebook where I can write each dose and time. 4. Hanging notes in various places to jog my memory. 5. Timing most drugs around a meal, bedtime, or routine task like brushing my teeth. Managing your diet and fluids. When healthy people eat and drink, their bodies use what they need and automatically get rid of the extra fluid and wastes. When the kidneys work, a lot of the body's wastes and extra fluids are removed in the urine. As the kidneys start to fail, or when they have failed, protein waste, extra minerals, and fluid build up in the body. One way to feel better when your kidneys don't work is to reduce the burden on the body by changing what you eat and drink. In Module 9, Nutrition and Fluids for People on Dialysis, you can learn more about meal plans. In this module, we'll touch on 3 points to help you with your overall diet and fluid management. 1. Getting enough calories. 2. Keeping an eye on protein. And 3. Watching fluid intake. Some people whose kidneys are failing don't have many symptoms. Others feel like they have the flu all the time. Kidney failure can cause loss of appetite. Food may taste funny, like metal or ammonia. Meat, chicken, and fish may become foods you just can't face. Even old favorites may lose their appeal. If you are very overweight, losing some weight because you're just not hungry probably won't hurt you. But if you are normal weight or underweight, you could become malnourished if you don't get enough calories. Malnutrition is linked with higher risk of infection, hospital stays, and death in people with kidney disease. If your appetite is poor, if you are losing weight, or you feel tired all the time, be sure to tell your doctor. It may be helpful for you to see a dietitian who can do tests to make sure you're getting enough nutrition. If your kidneys are failing, but have not failed completely, you may get special food instructions from your doctor or dietitian. If you have kidney damage but not kidney failure, you may be asked to drink lots of fluids to help flush out waste, eat less salt to help with blood pressure and to keep you from retaining fluid, eat less protein found in meats, fish, chicken, turkey, eggs, peanut butter, soy, etc. Some patients feel that eating less protein is something they can do to have more control over their kidney problem. Ask your doctor about your protein needs. People who start dialysis may be told to do just the opposite of what they were doing before. It may seem as if the dietitians or doctors can't make up their minds or don't really know what they're doing. But trying to help failing kidneys last longer is very different from replacing kidney function. For example, people on dialysis may need to eat extra protein to be sure they stay healthy and don't get malnourished. People on PD may gain weight, even though they do not eat more calories, because their dialysis fluid contains a kind of sugar. This sugar serves a purpose. It helps to remove the excess fluid from the body, but it also provides calories, even without eating. Instead of drinking lots of fluids, people who do standard in-center HD 3 times a week need to cut back, because dialysis is not done long enough or often enough to remove as much fluid as healthy kidneys. In the short term, having to remove too much fluid during dialysis makes treatments uncomfortable by causing dizziness, nausea, muscle cramps, headaches, and faintness. Doing HD treatments daily or at night while you sleep removes much more fluid gently and is easier on the heart. Over time, gaining too much fluid between treatments can become a burden on your heart and lungs. The heart can be stretched like a water balloon. Once stretched, the heart does not return to its normal shape. Instead, the flabby muscles must work harder and harder. This is called congestive heart failure and is a major cause of death for people on dialysis. Too much fluid can also cause shortness of breath. What are the signs of congestive heart failure? Your heart pumps blood through your body. Heart failure means that your heart pumps too weakly to keep up with your body's needs. Without a strong blood flow from your heart to the rest of your body, you feel tired and worn out. Also, blood backs up in your veins. Fluid can seep out of your veins and build up in your lungs and other parts of your body. This extra fluid can make it harder to breathe and can build up in your legs, ankles, and other parts of your body. Symptoms of congestive heart failure include shortness of breath, decreased exercise tolerance, muscle weakness, swelling of the legs, feet, or ankles, swollen neck veins, abdominal swelling, pain, or nausea, mental confusion, palpitations, which are extra heartbeats, fast heartbeat. Some of these symptoms can also be caused by other conditions. If you are concerned about symptoms that you or a loved one has, ask your doctor. On standard in-center HD, the amount of fluid you can drink depends on how much urine you make. If you make a lot of urine, you can have more fluid. If you don't make urine, you need to drink less fluid. Your doctor and dietitian will decide a fluid allowance for you each day based on your urine output. The goal is to balance the amount you take in and the amount removed. Your job is to keep your fluid intake as close as possible to your doctor's prescribed amount each day. Although challenging, it can be done. To help you take in the right amount of fluid, you must know what is considered a fluid and what is not. Which of these items do you think are fluids that should count towards your daily limit? Water, ice or ice chips, soda pop, beer, coffee, ice cream, popsicles, soup, gravy, jello or gelatin? Okay, so it's a trick question of sorts. Everything on the list is a fluid. The ones that throw some people off track are soup, gravy, and ice cream, because we tend to think of them as foods and not liquids. The rule of thumb is any food that is liquid at room temperature, like popsicles, ice cream, or ice, and foods with high fluid content, like gravy or soup, are fluids that count in your daily limit. Until you get used to how much fluid you can safely drink, it's a good idea to measure it. Use measuring cups full of water to learn how many ounces your coffee mug, juice glass, and regular glass hold. Ask for samples of fast food cups in different sizes and write the ounces on the side of each cup with a magic marker. With practice, you'll know just how much fluid a cup holds.
Or, here's one way that people on standard in-center HD have mastered fluid measurements. Using a measuring cup, measure out your whole fluid amount for the day and put it into a pitcher or jar. Each time you drink, use the cup you drank from to remove that amount of liquid from the pitcher. In a day or two, you'll get a good feel how to stay within your fluid amount and how to spread it out over a day. As you work at following your fluid intake, you can help yourself by using less salt in your diet. Salt makes you thirsty, makes your body hold more water, and contributes to high blood pressure and weight gain. Because nearly all foods have small amounts of salt, you can't remove all salt from your diet. Talk with a dietitian to learn of other ways to make your food tasty without adding salt. Most people find that foods taste very bland at first, but once they get used to less salt, they prefer it and find normal foods too salty. Salt is not the only cause of thirst. Some drugs have thirst as a side effect. If you find that you're thirsty all the time, ask your pharmacist whether any of your drugs might be the reason. If the answer is yes, talk to your doctor about whether a different drug might work for you. Here are some tips other people on standard in-center HD have used to cut fluid intake and fight thirst. Suck on hard candies or mints, sugar-free if you have diabetes. Use moist mouth swabs. Swallow pills or capsules with soft foods like applesauce or pasta instead of using fluid. Drink your fluids very cold or even frozen, like ice cubes or slushies. Put a bottle with the entire amount of your favorite fluid in the fridge. When it's empty, you're done for the day. Buy and freeze plastic liquid-containing party ice cubes. Suck on them to get a nice cold feeling without fluid. Make sure these are large enough to avoid choking and free of leaks. Eat soup, stews, and cereals with a fork to avoid the liquid. Managing dialysis. Even when dialysis is needed, standard in-center HD 3 times a week only replaces about 10 to 15% of normal kidney function. Longer and more frequent treatments such as daily or nocturnal HD remove more fluid and waste, so most patients who do them feel much better. This means that people who need dialysis have the important job of making sure they get as much treatment as possible to feel their best. Depending on the type of dialysis, the doctor will prescribe a certain number of treatments each week to help filter out the waste and extra fluid that build up when the kidneys fail. Many people on dialysis think that if they are feeling good, they are getting enough dialysis or maybe even too much. Feeling good is a key measure of getting enough dialysis. But people who rely just on how they feel may be tempted to skip a treatment or shorten their treatment time. Over time, not getting enough dialysis causes waste products to build up in the blood. This leads to breathing trouble, weakness, itching, poor appetite, nausea, and weight loss. It can also lead to serious problems such as infections, prolonged bleeding, and heart damage. Every minute on dialysis counts. There's no such thing as too much. It's very important to get the prescribed amount of dialysis or even ask for longer or more frequent treatments. There are a number of things that could shorten a standard in-center HD treatment. Arriving late or leaving a treatment early. Alarms that shut the dialysis machines off temporarily. Bathroom breaks. Leg cramps. These can be caused by drinking too much fluid. Low blood pressure. What one patient says about getting every treatment. Donna says, "I have never skipped a treatment. I have been on hemo since December 1996. I asked to have my treatments lengthened from 3.5 hours to 4 hours, even though my numbers were excellent. I think I feel better with the extra time, and that's what counts." I know of 3 people who skipped treatments. One is dead, one is mentally unbalanced, and the doctors are trying to get her treatment before she kills herself. And the other is slowly dying, but will not increase treatments because he thinks alternative medicine, herbs and tonics, will cure his kidney failure. The doctors have tried to reason with him, as have nurses and other patients, but the man and his family are believers. He looks like he has about another month if nothing is done. I'm told he skips every other treatment. In the long run, getting less dialysis means getting sicker, feeling worse, and not being able to do the things you love. If interruptions occur, the nurse may ask you to make up time. If for some reason that doesn't happen, then ask to make it up.
HD also requires a vascular access, a special blood vessel that is surgically created to handle the high blood flow rates created by the dialysis machine. There are a limited number of blood vessels in the body that can be used for dialysis access, so each one has to count. Caring for your vascular access so it will last as long as possible is another major part of managing your dialysis treatment. Infections, injuries, or blockages of the access may mean more drugs, special procedures, or surgery to fix or replace the access. Here are some valuable tips for hemodialysis access care. Keep your access clean. Wash your access with antibacterial soap and iodine or alcohol before it is used for dialysis. Tell the nurse if your access is warm, red, has pus, or you have a fever. Learn how to feel the thrill, vibration of the access, and listen for the brewy or buzzing in your access. Changes in the thrill or brewy help to diagnose when a blockage may be present in the access. Do not carry heavy weight across the access, but do go on with normal activities and use of the access limb. Squeezing a rubber ball or lifting moderate-sized weights can help the access develop and keep blood flow strong. Ask your doctor about it. Avoid pressure on the access during sleep. Exercise as instructed with a squeeze ball. Do not allow blood pressure checks or blood draws from the arm with the access. For PD to work, every exchange must be done. It's okay to shift the time of the exchanges a little bit, to run an errand or attend an event, but skipping exchanges means getting less dialysis. If you are having trouble getting all of your PD exchanges done, tell your nurse. Don't be afraid to take part in suggesting solutions. Taking this type of initiative is part of managing your care and your life with kidney failure. PD requires a catheter, a soft plastic tube that is surgically placed in the abdomen so that dialysate fluid can be put into the belly. Proper technique must be followed for each exchange to avoid infections that can cause permanent scarring and make PD impossible. Caring for your catheter so that it will last as long as possible is another important part of managing your dialysis. Here are some valuable tips for PD catheter care. Clean your exit site daily with an antiseptic soap or regular soap and water, depending on what your doctor prefers. Avoid moving the catheter around or tugging on it. Taping the catheter securely to the skin, or if tape bothers your skin, using a special kind of belt to secure it can keep it in place. Take showers instead of baths to keep clean. Baths expose your catheter to germs in the water that have washed off your skin. These germs can cause exit site infections. Some doctors recommend against swimming in lakes, rivers, and ponds, as germs in these bodies of water can also lead to several types of infections. Talk with your doctor before swimming anywhere. This includes pools or hot tubs. If the catheter can be covered with a reliable waterproof dressing, swimming is possible. Managing your goals. The goal you are shooting for, whether with drugs, food and liquids, or dialysis treatment, is to make informed, healthy choices. You are aiming for the best possible care, but it is hard to achieve perfect control and balance all the time. There will be days when you slip from being an active manager of your treatment plan to being a disgruntled employee. But rest assured that this will fade as you take back control of your treatment by making healthy choices. When you lose your bearings about how to manage your treatment plan in a healthy, proactive way, listen to this module again to refresh your perspective. This is the conclusion of Module 4 of Kidney School. We hope you enjoyed it and found it helpful, and will listen to other modules.